Today, we have the pleasure of welcoming an exceptional guest who has made significant contributions to the world of UX design and product management. With a background in engineering, he brings unique perspectives to solving complex design and product challenges, and currently serving as Senior Product Design Manager at nCino, he leads the design vision and strategy for the company's largest business unit, which impacts over 10 million users and touches one in four US mortgage loans. Our guest's journey from engineering to UX design and product management is a testament to the power of the interdisciplinary approach. And he firmly believes in the importance of foundational research and regular exposure to users to understand and uncover valuable insights and then translate them into actionable product strategies. His experience in building design systems and managing cross-functional teams during times of rapid growth has equipped him with a very deep understanding of the challenges and opportunities that come with scaling a product. So, without further ado, please join me in welcoming Mitchell Clements, Senior Product Design Manager at nCino. This podcast is brought to you by Same Logic, smart intercept surveys that product teams love. Mitch, your journey from engineering to UX design and product management is fascinating. Can you share some specific examples of how your engineering background has given you a unique perspective on solving complex design and product issues?
Yeah, that's a great question. I often hear the question of, do designers need to know how to code? And while I don't think designers need to actually, be able to go in hands-on and code things themselves, it really does help when you understand the limitations, the restrictions, the considerations of what the people that are going to actually implement your mockups are going to go through. And so having that knowledge has really just helped empower me to not just view every challenge or feature or product from just the lens of a designer, but have empathy for my peers of, does this make sense from an engineering perspective? What challenges or complications might they run into? So just having that knowledge has really helped empower my mindset and perspective when it comes to build effective products.
I love that. Also, you mentioned the importance of a foundational research when it comes down to identifying user pain points. How do you ensure that your team is consistently uncovering the right insights, and what methods have you found to be most effective in translating those insights into actionable product strategies?
Yeah, in terms of the research methods, there's so many different tools or methods or processes out there. What really is the most important to me is just the regular exposure to users and, use a diversity of tools and methods because they all have their pros and cons, but just make sure it's regular. You're regularly getting that feedback through qualitative samples, quantitative samples, and really just understanding a wide, diverse array of feedback. And in terms of taking that feedback and turning it into action, I think it's essential that that feedback's not just sitting in a silo. Often researchers or product managers or whoever, they're gathering all this feedback and they're using it to inform their own decisions. But when they present those decisions to others, the other people don't see that research. They don't have that context. And so they might not be on the same page as the researcher or whoever is gathering that feedback and data. And so the same way you want regular exposure to your customers and your users, I think it's important to have a proactive strategy of how are we exposing that regularly to our stakeholders, to the other people that might not be doing the hands-on research, whether it's just sharing clips here and there or quotes and testimonials or just including that data when you give a presentation. It's really important to bring everyone else along the journey with you so they know where your proposals are coming from and that really is backed in that data.
I love that. You also mentioned empathy earlier on. So I'm kind of like wondering as well, when it comes down to conducting a foundational research, how does it look, or how more impactful is it when empathy is applied to the entire process?
Yeah, definitely makes a difference. And empathy is one of those, it's a word that's often potentially overused. A lot of people don't understand the difference between sympathy and empathy. Now, sympathy is when we think we understand someone else because we're sympathetic, we're trying to understand them. Empathy is kind of a whole new level of you know what someone is going through because you've experienced it yourself. I did this in a very unique way at my company where we were designing for home buyers. And so we're really trying to understand the problems and challenges that home buyers are going through during the process of buying a home. And to really build empathy, I went through the process myself. I went out and I tried buying a home, and it was hard. It was overwhelming. It was terrifying. Obviously it's going to be hard in different with different user types to actually become your user. And that's where the sympathy comes in, just really exposing yourself to the challenges they're facing and just really try to see it from their perspective, understand what they're going through, the pain they're feeling, why it's so painful. It will not only help you get more creative in how to solve those problems, but it'll really just compel you to solve those problems. You'll just feel kind of the passion and energy of, I want to make these people's life better. And that will help drive you to the best solutions that will help them.
I love that. Shifting gears here. When it comes down to SimpleNexus as well, the growth the company's experience has been spectacular. What are some of the key inflection points in that journey, and how did your approach to UX design and product management evolve as the company scaled?
Yeah, so a little context on SimpleNexus. I started as employee number 17. We were a small basement startup, very scrappy, and our product started very simple, but over time it grew in complexity as we kept adding features. And there wasn't very much emphasis on the user experience or the product vision of where are we going and what is this product evolving into. And so I kind of took a step back as a designer, and it was really important to me to understand what is that vision. Obviously, we're listening to customers, we're implementing their feedback. But anytime you get feedback or have ideas or features, there's multiple ways to design a solution. And it's hard to know which of those solutions is the right one, or how should that independent feature or solution, where should it go? How should it relate to all the other features and solutions? And you'll often find companies, they just kind of blindly keep adding features. They keep just, they're listening to customers, they're acting on data and feedback. But when it comes to that solution arena, they're starting to build a very complicated product, and the user journey gets lost. The user experience is overwhelming. And so one of the key things that I did was helping the company see the vision, starting to create these prototypes and concepts of what if we zoomed out instead of just focusing on the next 3 to 6 months of features, let's take a step back and look at the big picture. What could this user journey for home buyers look like in 3 to 5 years? And not just talking about it, but actually showing it. And so I started kind of formulating a product vision by showing instead of telling and sharing that with the company. And it really helped everyone to start to zoom out and see the big picture of here is how we're going to build a winning product. And I think just that mindset of starting with the end, then you know how to channel all of your energy, all of your data and insights and research to something more holistic. That was a really key pivoting moment and tool we used, was just having that vision in place. so we could use our time and energy to build something holistic and cohesive.
I love that. That must have required a lot of effort, you know, obviously, and managing, teams cross-functionally. So when it comes on to cross-functional teams and managing and aligning cross-functional teams, it's a big challenge in product development. Can you share some strategies that you've used to create and just like keep everything on track in times of rapid growth?
Yeah. Back to that principle of showing instead of telling. Far too often, I see teams trying to coordinate through roadmaps that are just a bunch of list of features or ideas, but not everyone really understands what each of those features or problems are or what they mean. And so one of the things that I did with this vision is, you know, instead of just labeling an idea with words or text, I would visualize it. So when people saw a concept, it would just immediately click, oh, that's what you mean. And oh, I can see how our part of the puzzle connects to your part of the puzzle and what this holistic vision is coming together as. And so it's just really, instead of just focusing on Jira backlogs of projects and features and epics and ideas, go beyond the text and try to show instead of tell. They say if a picture is worth 1,000 words, and if you can just show what you mean, it's going to click a lot faster and help everyone start to align and start to understand where the future is and where things are going.
I love that. Like showing things visually definitely drive the point home. You've had a tremendous experience building design systems that unify web, Android, and iOS platforms. Can you walk us through your process for creating a cohesive design language across multiple touch points? And how do you ensure that the system remains flexible enough to accommodate future growth and innovation?
Yeah, when in the early days of Simple Nexus, we did not have a design system at all. And yet we were building iOS, Android, web, multiple platforms. And it really did start to get out of control because everyone was just kind of doing their own thing. A lot of people weren't thinking about the holistic picture of what happens when a home buyer goes from the website and downloads the app. And how do we make sure that experience is holistic and cohesive between the two? And so I kind of rallied the design team together and we did a comprehensive audit of our entire product. We took a screenshot of every single screen and workflow and interaction. And we printed this whole thing out and just threw it up on the wall so we could step back and just see the whole thing. And this caught a lot of people's attention. People were walking by our desk and were like, wow, what is that? And we said, that's our product. And we took this big collage and image and we shared it at a company-wide all hands meeting. It's kind of our show and tell. And we specifically took all of the individual button styles we had across the product and put them in this big collage. And we showed the company that we had over 54 button styles.
Wow.
And they looked horrible together. You know, I'm not talking about like 54 buttons that look related, but just there was every color of the rainbow across those buttons. Zero cohesion, zero. And some have shadows, some are flat, some are pills, some are rectangles. And it really shocked everyone. Like, why do we keep creating new button styles? Why don't we just build a button once and reuse that everywhere? And so starting with that audit and that exposure to the company really rallied everyone in of, okay, we need to start coordinating and have a dedicated effort around a design system language and make sure the design is matching the code components. We're coordinating across Android, iPhone, and web. And initially, some people started with the mindset of, okay, how long will it take to build all the components we need? There was this mentality of, we'll just build a design system. we've checked the box and then we're done. And it was a really critical moment to communicate. A design system isn't just a one-time project, but it's a living, breathing ecosystem of resources and tools that are going to empower everyone else. And with any living, breathing system, it's going to need continual updates and iteration. And so once we were able to communicate that, it started to click in people's minds of a design system isn't just a one-time project we implement, but it's something we need process around. It needs to be updated, needs to be maintained. We're going to make mistakes. We're going to need to adjust things just like you do in any product process. And so I think those were some of the crucial takeaways I had from that journey of getting buy-in for a design system and then rallying people around to how are we going to use it and maintain it and build it.
I love that. As a leader, how do you balance the need for speed and the agility with the importance of maintaining a high bar for design quality and user experience? I think frameworks play a big role with that, where that's concerned. But yes, I think we could go a bit further as well.
Yeah, it makes me think that I've often seen this diagram go around where it's like a triangle, and you know, at each point of the triangle, you have speed, you have quality, and you have resources. And, you know, it says you can only pick two. And it's definitely, there could be a lot of tension around that topic of speed versus quality versus do we just throw more people on something? Or I think one of the crucial lessons I have learned is that you need alignment as a company and as a team. And that alignment is best articulated through goals and outcomes. Because often teams, if you're only focusing, like, sometimes you have designers who just want quality at all costs. Now, they want to build the best experience possible, but then you might have a product manager who feels pressure to deliver something on a short timeline. Or you might have a developer saying, let's just do the easiest thing, whatever's easiest to implement. And there can often be some tension from the different viewpoints. None of them are wrong, but how do you align on those trade-offs? And if you have an outcome or goal you're trying to achieve as a cross-functional team, it starts to change the narrative from speed versus quality to what's the best solution to get that desired outcome. The desired outcome is adoption for a feature, then you're really going to have to think about how much quality do we need and scope to make sure users will want to use this feature. Other times, speed might be a higher priority if, you know, there's market conditions, competitors, being first to market might be more advantageous, and that's the outcome or goal. But if you start with what is the goal, what is the outcome, the change we're expecting from building this product or feature or solving this pain point, then you can start to determine what trade-offs are we going to make to get there.
And I love that. Also, like when it comes on to PLG, you know, a lot of companies are adopting PLG, you know, so what role do you see UX design and research playing in driving user acquisition, retention, and expansion when it comes on to adopting a product-led strategy?
Yeah, with the product-led growth strategy, that's where UX is very important. Because instead of solely relying on sales or marketing to convince people to buy your product or subscribe to your subscription or whatever it is, with the product-led growth model, basically your product's going to sell itself. People are going to use it and love it. Now, far too often, companies assume they're, you know, we're doing product-led growth, and if we build it, they will come. But they're solving the wrong pain points. It's not at that bar of quality for users to love it. And that's where user research plays such a critical role of we need to make sure we are not missing the mark. it's not enough to just check the box and say we have these features or say we're solving these pain points, but we need to solve them effectively. We really need to understand the ins and outs of the pain our customers and users are feeling. And then once we build a prototype, you know, let's go out and test that. Let's go make sure they're going to love the solution before we build the solution. And then even after you build the solution, there's further opportunity to get feedback and validate and iterate. And if you invest in the research and data up front, it's going to save you a lot of rework and energy afterwards, because you're getting closer to building the right thing before building it, instead of building the wrong thing and then having to scrap it all together and start from the ground again. And so I think user research plays a very crucial role there.
What role does storytelling play in your work as a UX designer and a product manager? And how do you use it to inspire and motivate those around you?
Yeah, storytelling is honestly, I never understood it when I first started my career. I thought storytelling was something that, you know, maybe people who write scripts for movies do. Like, you go to a movie for the story. I thought that's what storytelling was. And so I never fully grasped, like, what do we mean by storytelling as a product manager or a designer or a researcher? As I've grown and matured my career, I've realized I use storytelling every single day. And it's ultimately using a narrative to influence others. Using a compelling narrative to help everyone understand where you're coming from and to convince them to move and unify towards a certain direction. It is such a powerful tool for alignment. It's a powerful tool for helping persuade others. And I mean, I use it daily. I can't survive without storytelling now as a design leader and product leader, because you have to align everyone together. And when you have that alignment, everything will be so much easier. But if you are misaligned and miscommunicating and have competing priorities, you're not going to be able to make progress.
I love that. But what's your approach to measuring the impact of UX design and research on key business metrics? And how do you communicate the value to the rest of the organization?
Yeah, there's a lot of ways to go about this. One of the important things is to really make sure you first understand what are the business goals? What is the business strategy? Obviously, every company wants to increase revenue and decrease costs. But you're going to need to go kind of take a step further of, well, what is our strategy for increasing revenue and our strategy for decreasing costs? And that's where UX can come in. There's a lot of ways you can use effective user experience design and research to help the business achieve those goals. And you're often going to do that by helping your users achieve their goals. So if you really go and understand your users and their pain points and the problems they're facing, that's going to empower you to build the best product. And if you're building the best product, then that enables so many opportunities, whether it's that product-led growth, whether it's just simply convincing users to choose you over a competitor, whether it's increasing conversion rates. If you help your users meet their goals, then you'll naturally be able to meet the business goals, because you're going to have those customers and users that love you, that are willing to pay for your features and your future updates. And so really, it can be such a powerful tool, but you have to understand your users' goals and you have to understand the business goals, and then bridge the gap of how those two can support each other.
All right. There are a lot of aspirants who listen to this program as well. So as a mentor, what are some of the most common challenges that you see early career UX designers or product managers face? And what advice would you give to them?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think a lot of early career people, first off, they often underestimate the power of product vision or storytelling or zooming out and seeing the big picture, because they're often just very hyper-focused on their product or their features or the challenges right in front of them, which is natural because they're also, they're gaining confidence in their skill set, they're building their skill set. And so they're trying to just kind of tackle whatever challenge is in front of them. But as you grow in your career from junior to mid-level to senior, and then ultimately into management and leadership, or becoming a principal product manager or principal product designer, your ability to influence and see the big picture and how everyone's teams and features and solutions can all align and work together, that becomes so crucial to be able to zoom out, see the big picture, and then make sure all the individual pieces are aligning towards that.
Love that. Mitchell, we're going to play a game right now. So,
Okay.
I'm going to ask you 20, 10 questions, 10 rapid fire questions, and you're going to select either. And you can like also explain the reasons for choosing that very briefly.
Okay.
And let's go through them very rapidly. All right. So, number one, qualitative research or quantitative research?
I immediately want to say it depends, but usually qualitative research can give you the why, and then quantitative research helps you see the scope of that. You're going to need both. If I have to choose one, I'd probably say qualitative.
Love that. Moderated usability testing or unmoderated usability testing?
I am a huge fan of moderated. It empowers you a lot more. That being said, unmoderated is so much cheaper and faster to do. But if I have to choose one, I'll stick with moderated.
Love that. Affinity diagramming or user journey mapping?
Oof. These are all tough because I keep wanting to say it depends, but I'm also pushing myself to choose one or the other. But I'm going to go with user journey mapping on this one. When we created our product vision, it started with the user journey map, and we showed what the experience was today. And the vision was essentially what would it look like if we elevated every pain point in that journey map. So I have a special affinity towards journey mapping.
Eye tracking or click tracking?
Oof. I'm going to say eye tracking there.
Card sorting or tree testing?
Oh man, these are hard. I'm going to pick card sorting there.
Awesome. Personas or jobs to be done?
I'm going to have to go with jobs to be done. Personas can be effective, but 95% of the personas I've seen out there are not effective.
Number seven, contextual inquiry or diary studies.
I'm going to go contextual inquiry.
Number eight, usability heuristics or user experience questionnaires.
I'm going to go with user experience questionnaires because you can customize it more.
Love that. Number nine, A/B testing or multivariate testing. Multivariate testing.
That one, I'm undecided, but we'll go with A/B testing.
All right. And number 10, behavioral analytics or attitudinal analytics.
I initially want to say behavioral, but when it comes, yeah, I'm going to stick with behavioral.
All right, love that. Mitchell, we have one question here, and this question is asked to everyone who comes on the show. And the question
Okay.
is, what's one weakness that you've turned into your strength?
One weakness that I've turned into a strength. I alluded to this earlier with the storytelling. This early in my career, I did not understand the power of a good narrative. I just kind of blindly assumed if I just show people the data, just show, tell people what we should do, then they'll just believe me. They'll just want to follow. And I quickly realized early in my career, the ability to persuade and influence is so challenging and difficult, especially at scale. And I was not great at it at first, but over time, through study, through observation and practice, I started understanding how to show instead of tell, how to create comprehensive and compelling narratives to rally people together to want to build the best product and rally them towards a specific direction. So just once again, do not underestimate the power of a good storyteller.
I love that. Mitchell, it was great having you on the podcast.
Yeah, it was my pleasure to join. Thank you. It was fun to be here and fun to share these insights.